Hi, welcome to Indiana Weekend with John Strauss. This is a kind of radio magazine show about the interesting places and intriguing people in our part of the state. We get out of the studio and onto the road to find the kind of radio you don't hear so much anymore. Stories off the beaten path and usually away from the top headlines. We figure the weekend is a good time for that. Time to lean back a little, slow down, meet somebody interesting, hear what people are saying. Of course, when we're not on the radio, you can catch up with us on Facebook. Just search Indiana Weekend. And we'd love to hear your thoughts about the show, your comments, thoughts about whom we might talk with, or where you would like to hear our microphones. Our email address is, conveniently enough, indianaweekend@gmail.com. I'm John Strauss. Have you ridden your bicycle lately? This is that time of year when practically any morning seems like a great gift, a chance to get outside and make up for winter months. Cycling is big this time of year, of course, and there's a movement you've heard about to encourage cycling for commuters. Indianapolis has a big bike lane project along with the Monon Trail. East Central Indiana has the Cardinal Greenway and other paths. You have CEBA, the Central Indiana Bicycling Association, at cebaride.org, which helps everybody from beginners to veterans and schedules lots of events. Today we'll look at the topic of cycling, the cost, safety, and meet a Ball State University instructor who's done the famous bike ride across Indiana, the Rain Ride, 9 times, but has practical riding tips for us more casual riders. But first, you should meet Bob Davenport from Upland, Indiana. Bob is 79 years old and has ridden across the country from the Pacific to the Atlantic. Impressive enough, right? He's done that 43 times and continues to lead long-distance cycling trips with his group, Wandering Wheels.
Wandering Wheels really started out as a kind of a knee-jerk thing. I was a football coach and former college football player, made a couple All-American teams out of UCLA. When I came to the Midwest to coach football at Taylor, I was invited out to churches all over the state and the surrounding states to talk to kids and let them kind of get the idea that going to church wasn't for sissies. And I did that for about 20 years and got burned out talking. And I just felt like I had to get someplace where I could experience rubber hitting the road and not just talking about the good things that come from going to church, but getting down to where they could really hands-on experience it. And I was looking for a gimmick, some kind of dynamics that I could attract kids with. And I thought of parachuting, motorcycling. But with a 10-speed varsity bike was just coming back when I was being inspired.
Would that be the Schwinn Varsity?
Schwinn Varsity. And 10-speed. And back then, it was real cool to talk about having 4 on the floor. So we told them, we talked to the kids, said, we're going to give you 10 on the bar. So anyway, we took off almost in conjunction with the popularity of the 10-speed. And I had no idea what would happen if we took a 1,000-mile bike ride. And the bike ride wasn't so much the draw as 1,000 of anything, 1,000 miles. So I went and bought 15 bikes and took 15 young boys up to the Mississippi Headwaters and rode from the Mississippi Headwaters to Cairo, Illinois in about 2.5 weeks. Everything I ever wanted to happen in communicating to young kids happened on that bike trip, but it was the most arduous thing I'd ever done. I vowed I'd never do it again. Lucky to get out of it alive. But anyway, that was the start of this whole thing. And by the time I got finished with that first trip, the phone was ringing off the hook. And neighbors were saying, we're not sure what you did to Johnny Jones next door, but we want the same thing to happen to our boy. So vowing never to do it again, I turned around and did it again in 1965. And the phone just kept ringing off the hook. And in 1966, we took our first coast-to-coast with 40 young boys, average age 15.
In 1966?
Yes.
And how many times have you done that since?
Now, we've done it 68 times coast-to-coast.
And how many of those trips have you made, Bob?
I have personally ridden, document the fact that I've ridden it 43 times. And my dear wife has ridden it 24 times.
That is a trip that for a lot of people would be the goal of a lifetime.
Bucket list, major bucket list.
You take these folks
110 miles a day?
We did back then with the kids. Yeah. Wow. Now we're working with basically adults. We're a little kinder. But back then, we'd average about 100 miles a day.
How many is it now?
Well, now we run about 75 miles a day.
That's a lot for day after day. Yeah. And how long does it take?
Well, we've cut the adult trip down to 2,500 miles, and that's a six-weeker. So they're running out about 65, 70 miles a day.
For six weeks.
And it's this. Anyone could do a day. Anyone could do maybe 2 days. But once you get into the first week, the second week, then all of a sudden the brain takes over. And so you need a little bit of reserve that you've never reached for before.
It's hard to imagine how much in shape you have to be to do something like
that.
Well,
not really. You can start out of shape, and we'll get you in shape in 2.5 weeks, and dying all the way until you find yourself kind of cresting and getting over the hump. But the fact of it doing things for you physically, there's nothing like 10, 12 hours of biking all day long with the carrot dangling out in front of you, the end of that day, but also the end of the trip, which will be 3,000 miles later.
You must really see some changes in people when they do that.
Well, the funny thing is, you say you see changes. You do in an immediate sense, but right now we've taken almost 3,500 across the U.S., and half of those were 15-year-old boys. And I'm now getting letters almost 35, 40 years later saying something to the effect, the most important, valuable, best thing I ever did was riding that bike coast to coast.
What happens?
It's a multiple of things that happen. I guess the biggie is the bragging rights. You know, talking to their, not necessarily their children, but to their grandchildren. When I was a kid, you know, I rode a bicycle coast to coast. Well, that's big smoke for a granddad talking about something like that. But it's a lot more than riding the bike. It's grassroots feeling America, being in a desert all day long, looking forward to nothing more than more water. And being, it used to be, I'd say, okay, gang, we're going to say thanks for our food. Well, you know, when you're home doing it routinely, you get bored and you go, here we go again. But when we were on the bikes, all of a sudden, are you thankful for your chow? And they'd pray almost all night long being thankful for the food they're getting. So things like simple things you take for granted, all of a sudden, just having another 20 minutes to sleep before you have to get up and hit the road again the next morning.
How much of this is mental in terms of getting across the country on a bicycle?
Well, a lot of it is mental. I can't say. And, you know, the mind works in conjunction with, almost against the muscles. And it is both mental and physical. But I think some are strongest-looking athletic-type guys are the ones who bonk out first. And the little skinny runt who you wouldn't put on your football team is the one that seems to have the ability to not necessarily even be in better shape, but he mentally breaks through that barrier that sometimes the more gifted-looking guy or gal, the brain takes over and all of a sudden they can't do it.
What's the difference between the people who can keep going? And it's almost an allegory for life, isn't it?
Well, it really is. And I guess my not necessarily assumption, but my reasoning would say something to the effect that the runt of the litter, so to speak. And not only is he the runt of the litter off time who really succeeds, he winds up being the one when you come in and say, hey, can I help you? And the other guys who look so gifted are zonked out, and they're dead, they're tired, they're worn out. And I grew up as a jock. I was, you know, an All-American football player. And I coached football, and I knew how to select the guys who could make good ball players. But I would never turn my attention to the little water boy type. And the bicycle caused me to see them being heroes, being really the tough ones. And not just with the less well-endowed looking fella. All of a sudden, we started inviting girls to join us, and the gals blew us away as to their ability, their stamina, their mental toughness. So it wasn't just the little skinny guy who became a hero. These gals became heroes in their own right.
Can you tell me a story from one of your times on the road where you saw somebody turn that corner?
We had a gal who dreamed about going coast to coast. She worked for General Motors, and she worked overtime, everything she could, to get enough money to take the trip with us. But anyway, we started our trip in California, and early on, she had an asthmatic sort of condition that really, really knocked her dead almost. And we thought, okay, we're going to have to send her home. And I was riding along next to her, and she was struggling. And I reached out and put my hand on her back and started helping her. And there was kind of an energy flow, and this sounds a little bit religious, but there was an energy flow I could feel being transferred from myself to pushing her. I pushed her for a couple of days, and it seemed to get her over the hump. And before I knew it, she was riding up to speed on her own, and she was trophy material once we were done.
Bob Davenport, founder of the coast-to-coast cycling group Wandering Wheels, based in Upland, where he was formerly coach of the Taylor University football team. By the way, they have motor scooter trips as well, and the details are at wanderingwheels.org. Have you ever had a life-changing experience like that? Drop us a note at weekendindiana@gmail.com, and be sure to check out our Facebook page for video versions of our stories as well.
You're listening to Indiana Weekend, real radio from just down the road. Look for that name on Facebook and drop us a line. Let us know what you think at indianaweekend@gmail.com. Now here's John Strauss.
Talking about the summer cycling season today, and for inspiration, we're hearing the stories of the people who think of 20 miles as just a quick ride around the neighborhood. You've met Bob Davenport of Upland, who's ridden coast to coast across the country 43 times. For somebody who's not quite that extreme, meet Tim Underhill, a telecommunications instructor at Ball State University. Have you ever heard of the one-day, 160-mile bicycle ride across Indiana, the Rain Ride? Tim has actually ridden the bike ride across Indiana 9 times.
Cycling is almost a lifestyle. I'm not someone who does races. I'm not someone who spends every ounce of money on every latest new thing, but I ride my bicycle almost every day, and I do it for transportation, but I do it because I enjoy it, and it's fun. It's just, if I weren't able to ride, I'd really be disappointed, I guess. I always said, you know, anytime I've had any health problems, if it were something that were to prohibit me from riding my bike, I would take attention to it. You know, my right elbow messes up my racquetball playing, so I don't play as much racquetball. But if it were to mess up my cycling, then I would change things or have surgery or whatever just to keep riding. And so I do. I enjoy riding. I ride my bicycle to work. I don't have far to go. I don't do it for the environment. That's a nice benefit. I do it because it's inexpensive. It's economical. It actually gets me to my office quicker than if I did drive and walk from the parking lot. I can park right outside the office. And I've gotten to where I'm pretty much a fair weather cyclist, too. Yeah, I don't like to ride when it's raining. If it's cold, I can bundle up, that's fine. And if it's icy, I probably quit, too. I kind of stopped that as well. I used to ride in all weather. When I first started riding my bicycle to work, it didn't stop me until I usually wrecked because of the icy roads. And almost every time I wrecked, I broke something. Fortunately, it was breaking something on the bicycle and not on me. A brake lever here, a toe clip there. And that was my signal that, you know, maybe it's time I should stop riding now and start walking. So I'm close enough to work to walk. And then when I ride to exercise, I really have been enjoying the Cardinal Greenway. And so I can go out and ride 20 miles on the Cardinal Greenway, not have to fight traffic, get out, and I just love the outdoors and enjoy moving along without hearing the mechanics of a motor or an exhaust and just under my own power. And sometimes I go for the workout, for the exercise, and oftentimes I just go to enjoy the outdoors.
There's got to be something deep down where it just feels good.
I think it did start as an exercise with my first, I call my real bicycle as an adult, you know, first adult bicycle. Once I started riding, I did it for exercise to be in good shape and conditioning for health reasons. But because I've done it so often, it has become a part of me and I just do it. Now, there are times when I'm out and I enjoy being out in nature And there have been times when if you were riding along and saw me, you might hear me singing to myself. You never know. Or talking to myself or talking to the cows that I ride past. It gets kind of funny.
As long as the cows aren't talking back, well, I think that's good.
I get some strange looks from cows.
Here it is the summer. It's really nice. Somebody wants to start riding again. They look in the garage, and what they have is a beach bike or a 20-year-old bike or something like that. What advice do you have?
It doesn't take a lot of money to become a cyclist. And I tell people the most important thing for you to choose a bicycle is that it fits you. I don't care how much money you spend. If your bicycle doesn't fit, if it's not comfortable to ride, you're not going to want to ride it. It's going to be painful. You'll go for a couple miles, and you'll be tired of it really quickly.
So this isn't a real expensive thing to get into necessarily.
Well, of course, it can be extremely expensive.
I know where we're going here. Yeah.
But no, it doesn't have to be expensive. You can buy a bicycle at a garage sale for $15. I've seen it happen. That would last you for several years. You could ride 100 miles on that bicycle. Of course, not right off the bat. Slowly working your way up. We call that a century. When you ride 100 miles, it's a century.
In a year, right?
No, one day. 100 miles in one day is a century.
Yeah, I can't. No. How do you do that? I mean, that's a long way to go in one day.
When I first...
How long did it take you to build up to that?
I started riding... 10 miles was a long way. I used to have to stop halfway 10 miles to get a Gatorade. But the priority for any bicycle is that it fits. And it fits you. And that is, you know, the height, the length, you know, where your hands fit, how far the handlebars are, and saddle height, and all of those things that go into making sure a bicycle fits. Now, if you are wanting to get into it seriously, I suggest visiting a professionally trained bicycle fitter. But for a little bit amount of money, you can buy. It's not going to be a new bike. It's going to be 20, 30-year-old 10-speed. Yeah. But you can get a decent bicycle and start riding.
Tim Underhill, a Ball State University telecommunications instructor and avid cyclist, with some practical advice about cycling, explaining his love for the bike. He says if you get serious in the summer, you can probably handle the Hilly 100 down near Bloomington by October.
This is Indiana Weekend with John Strauss here on Indiana Public Radio.
We're talking today about cycling and some of the people who take somewhat longer trips. Take the folks at Wandering Wheels, for example. They've led dozens of coast-to-coast trips across the country. This spring, they took a somewhat shorter ride, only 1,100 miles, from Jacksonville, Florida to Cleveland. I went to the Wandering Wheels shop in Upland and met Jeanette Davenport, wife of founder Bob Davenport. She's in charge of all the maintenance and repairs of the bikes and still found time to ride more than 500 miles on that trip herself.
Well, it's actually fun, and it's a wonderful workout, and I would be considered a bicycle geek. So most people would not have a bicycle quite like mine. My bicycle is made out of titanium, and my bicycle was built custom from every little part. So when I had my frame made, they measured my body and determined that I was very short-waisted, and so my bicycle is actually made like a suit, and it is custom-made for exactly what I want to do with it and for my body.
What do we need to know when those of us who are not transcontinental bicycle riders get out, want to be safe, mm-hmm. and that's a concern for some of us who've seen people texting and listening to the radio or not paying full attention. How much of that do you worry about?
We worry a lot about that. To be honest with you, three things that we would really recommend. Number one is be seen. We wear the neon colors, the fluorescent yellow color.
You're showing me a...
Yes.
A fluorescent yellow.
Yes, it's the same color that you'll see the workers on the side of the road.
That's what it was.
Yep. It's also the same color of school signs and safety signs. And so the idea is that we have found that if people see us from a distance away and we actually give them the chance to make a good decision, they will.
Okay.
The other thing, too, is it seems to be natural for them to move away from that color because they know that there's, you know, it's a safety worker. And so we actually find they give us more room on the road if we wear that color. So number one, be seen. Number two, wear your helmet. We've had so many people fall and crack their helmets and walk away from it that we know for an absolute fact that that helmet has saved many, many, many lives. And then the third thing is we always ride with a mirror. And although it's not popular with racers, anyone other than racers, if you're out on the road, you're competing with 2,000-pound vehicles. And if you can see that someone might not be paying attention to you, then you can make a choice to get off of the road and get out of the way before they hit you, or before there's a close call even. And so the mirrors can be so important. It's kind of like you really wouldn't go driving your car if you didn't have a side or a rear view mirror. You would just not feel right. And so with the bicycle, you really are a vehicle competing for the same space. So if you're riding on a bike path, you don't need it. But if you're going to be out on the road, a mirror is a tremendous advantage to your well-being.
You ever had a close call?
Well, I've made 24 cross-country trips. And I've been hit twice, and not really hit, but brushed off of the road by a vehicle. And I would say I have maybe 150,000 miles, so a lot of miles.
I'll bet people, when they find out what you do, they must ask you, how do you do it? I mean, how do you stay in the saddle on a bicycle for that length of time? Are the things you think about? Do you sing songs?
Well, you know, it's kind of fun from the standpoint that this country is so big and it is so beautiful and it is so different. That it's it keeps you very entertained, and we really see the good in America. People are always very positive about what you're doing. We have people buy us dinner, ice cream, pie, bring us cold drinks along the side of the road at times. I mean, it really is a very, very positive experience. The other thing, too, is if you're riding along and you see a farmer out maybe in his field and you want to ask questions, you can just get off your bike and walk up and interact with them. And your senses are all alive when you're on a bicycle. You're really going slow enough to see it. You can smell it. If you really wanted to taste it, you could taste it. And so you're just really becoming in tune with things that are happening around you. And so I can't think of a better way to experience the United States and its beauty and the wonders of its people than on the seat of a bicycle.
That's Jeanette Davenport with the group Wandering Wheels of Upland, Indiana, about the safety considerations of riding on the road with other traffic. Interesting to hear those long-distance cyclists talk about how they keep themselves motivated. Something in there, even if you're not planning to ride across the country, but just need to get out and stick to your own exercise program. That's our show for today. I'm John Strauss. Big thanks to our producer, Marcus Jackman. Glad you could join us this time and hope you'll stay in touch. Drop me a note at indianaweekend@gmail.com if you'd like more information or have a suggestion. Reminder that we also need your stories, your ideas for places we should go and people we should talk to. In the meantime, thanks and have a great week. Until we meet again on the next Indiana Weekend on Indiana Public Radio, I'm John Strauss.